teachings on this passage aren't what's needed so much this morning as it is a place to connect to the emotion and the sense of our life, how this can mean something for us today in this place, fresh and new, when we're so wrapped in the tradition of all that is. Somehow they work together, and we hear in John's Gospel this morning that Mary Magdalene is headed to the tomb. The first day of the week, John says, it's early, and the text adds that it's in the dark that she travels. And in the writings, of course, you need a setting and you need time, and so the dark is an appropriate explanation of that, that it is the very beginning of the day. But in John's Gospel especially, these images of light and dark have such a deep meaning to the Gospel itself. John, wrapped in this tradition of the images of light and dark, hoping to open our hearts to a condition in our own lives and in the lives of the characters of this story, that in the dark and in the light, it has something to do with how convicted we are in our beliefs, where we are in our understandings. It's a barometer for our faith journey. So, for instance, early in John's Gospel, Nicodemus, the learned one, goes to question Jesus, but he goes in the dark of night, and we discover that Nicodemus is absolutely clueless as to what Jesus is really speaking about. And yet, in a few passages later, the Samaritan woman meets Jesus at the well in bright noonday sun. And she not only understands, but she is compelled in her very sense of connecting with Jesus to become the first evangelist, transforming her whole community into the knowledge of who Christ is. So you get the idea, dark and light, knowing and unknowing, belief and doubt, those sort of things run through this. In this case, our dear Mary is traveling in the dark. Overwhelmed in the shock and the grief of her beloved's death, it's only those deep feelings she can entertain. Her thoughts and her actions are just kind of on a default move, sort of in a fog. The least that I can do is anoint his body. The least I can do, everyone deserves a proper burial. Those kind of gut-level observations. But her heart is heavy, and it is so dark in her soul. And we can connect to those feelings of darkness, of heaviness. We know that in those places, it seems all we can do is grab for a lifeline, something to survive the moment of overwhelming grief or when hope has been broken open in a place that we feel it has disappeared. If we can just catch our breath is about all we can get to. What will I do now? Where will I go? I had all these plans. Everything was moving in a certain way. And in an instant, can I even remember to take a breath? We know what it felt like to be plunged into the same kind of dark that Mary was experiencing. And I suspect one of the things she responded to was thinking about her other friends. We almost get a sense of envy for other people. Where Peter and the other disciples, they could go back to fishing, they could go back to their old life, but what about me? What about someone who came from nothing? What will I return to? Who will I talk to? Where will my answers come from for the one who taught me, who moved me, who understood me is dead, and I don't know even where to find his body. Think about her life and 3 years of overwhelming purpose and love pouring over and through her. Those things also died with Jesus on that cross. In a moment, her life, her community that had been rich and powerful became reduced to sadness and disappointment and a gnawing emptiness. Now her constant companions since Friday. We don't have to look far to acknowledge that we have those moments where what we envisioned in our life falls to shambles around our feet. Maybe our children go astray, they get into something that we can't help to fix, or we get that pink slip from the employer that changes everything we thought was guaranteed, or worse yet, the tests come back and the report is positive. It happens to people, to good people, and bad people. The darkness is no respecter of any person. So we plead, why me, Lord? I go to church. I try to be a good person. My life, everything was going so well. What did I do to deserve this? Whatever that logic and reasoning seems to work in our minds, the truth is it disappears into a season of dark. But today, in the Easter promise, there is something that is on the edge of darkness. There's this movement. There's this something is afoot. While we can't get our minds and our hearts around it, there is this spirit, this inkling that the darkness of whatever situation it is not permanent. Well, we can't put our finger on why that is, but we can feel it in the idea of Easter. Like when we grab on to the powerful words of Pastor Lockridge, the African-American preacher who gave us this powerful sense and a glimpse of it. He said, it's Friday, but let me tell you something, Easter is coming. It's Friday, and the earth trembles, and the sky grows dark. My king yields his spirit. It's Friday, and hope is lost. Death has won, sin has conquered, and Satan is laughing. It's Friday. Jesus is buried. A soldier stands guard. The rock is rolled into place, he says. But it's Friday. It's only Friday. Sunday is coming. Sunday is coming. See, in order to understand or to encounter Easter in a way that is transformative, we have to spend some time in the dark and acknowledge that that's where we are. A place dark enough that even the smallest sliver of light doesn't really give us a sense of hope. In that same kind of darkness, in the depth of that, Easter is the last thing that we expect or can even imagine. And this is why Easter, the true Easter, terrifies us. And we can recall that even the disciples, when they see the resurrected Lord, they have fear and they are in disbelief. There is good company in the dark. A dark where this hope, can we even hope that hope could be in place? Because it's not about bunnies and it's not about springtime. It's about discovering that at precisely the moment when we feel all hope is gone, when we are hopeless, it is at that moment that we actually have more hope than we can possibly handle. But we cannot see in the dark. Mary makes her way down the road to the tomb in the dark. And I know she's recalling and trying to recall those times in Galilee. Oh, Galilee. How far away from this wretched place was Galilee? When Jesus was popular, when we had love and care, and where there was something, I don't know what we hoped for or what we expected, but all we knew is that it seemed in that moment that something, everything was possible. Galilee! And before that, memory can start to break into this darkness. She also remembers that he was crucified like a criminal. Did we get it wrong? Did they get it wrong? How could all of this go south so fast? And then by that time, in the darkness, she gets to the tomb. She arrives about the same time that just on the other side of the horizon of the darkness, you know there's a light coming, but you can't quite tell that it's there. That's when she gets there. And it's like a jolt. She's woken up. Her senses are alive. Because the tomb is empty. And a panic rushes over her. She's angry and she's unsettled. And she screams, running back to her friends, the other disciples, they've taken the Lord out of the tomb and I don't know where they laid him. So dark. While Mary's thoughts are racing who knows where, Peter, the other disciple, they take off. In fact, John's account tells us that for a while, people are just running back and forth to the tomb. They're running everywhere. You know, and it's not unlike what we do today in our discipleship. When we don't find Jesus where we think he ought to be, and we're not sure where
he is. We can't quite find him. We run around a lot. In how many directions? You know what I'm saying. We run because we got to get somewhere because he isn't where, you know, we want him to be. But for Mary, eventually, as that story fades away, Mary stands there weeping by the tomb, broken down in these tears and an empty tomb, looking into the darkness. Even angels, for heaven's sakes, even two angels who show up sitting in the tomb in this dark place where she's looking, that doesn't seem to even impress her at all. She just tells them the same thing. They've taken the Lord. Man, when we are in the dark, and that's all we can seem to lock onto, is the thing that we remembered when we last saw the light. It's like looking at the sun and then closing your eyes and you see that vivid image of something, the last thing that you stared at hard enough. It's kind of burned into your imagination. All you can remember is that last thing you saw in the light. And Mary can't see beyond what she expected. And in the dark, she can't see anything. This is our story. Listen, the pains and the scars of our life, you know what I'm talking about. Those disappointments, they seem so brilliantly vivid, especially in the dark. They like just stand out. And the mantra that we say, we complain over and over to all who will listen. They've taken the Lord. This has happened to me. I'm in the dark. I can't believe it. Why? Whatever the darkness yields to us. Like Mary, she can't even see or imagine anything other than the dead body of Jesus. When we find ourselves in Mary's kind of darkness, man, over and over, time and time again, we choose to try to find the God of our own condition, the one that says where you are is what you're supposed to do, the one that says this is what you deserve. You haven't been that good. Look what's coming to you. How do you think it should turn out different? We want a God that sort of says, yeah, you deserve this. You had it coming. But we're astonished and a bit disappointed when we discover that it's not Jesus standing there affirming our brokenness. So we just turn to the dark. You know, when we get in that place, it's like we want to just turn off the lights and brood a little bit. Are you with me? Like there's something about turning it down in the darkness that wants to give us our consolation. Because all we can think about is what was. And it's so locked in on us. But the hope is this, is that throughout John's gospel, Jesus keeps asking this powerful question. He says, who are you looking for? He said it in the call stories. He said it in the angst of dark Gethsemane when the crowd was coming with clubs and swords to arrest him. And they're standing before him, the angry mob. Jesus says, who are you looking for? And they say, Jesus of Nazareth. And I feel like he says this in a powerful way. But in any event, he says, I am he. And John says at that moment, the crowd just steps back and immediately they fall to the ground. Because there is this unspeakable power in encountering, seeking, meeting Jesus. Then we hear this same phrase again with Mary, beautiful Mary, outside the tomb. And I feel like she's just looking into the darkness. She doesn't recognize. She says, I don't know if she even turns fully around because she can't get past what was. She hears this voice, Jesus' voice, and she assumes it's the gardener. Whom are you looking for? And even though this light is starting to break, she can't see the possibility of any hope. No hope's light in her darkness. So she just mumbles desperately these directions. Give me, tell me where you put the body. Tell me so that I may take it. Just staring into the darkness of the empty tomb. Just let me wallow in this. Let me stay in this place, the only thing that I can remember. And then the risen Savior calls her by name. He says, Mary. And for the first time, she turns away, really turns term for her old teacher. And an instant that familiar recognition sort of kicks in as she lunges to embrace Jesus. And that's why we need Easter. That's why we need the music and the lights and the prayer and the gathering and the flowers on the cross. Because we are not designed to sustain ourselves in the dark. We're beautifully, wonderfully made to be dependent upon God, our Creator, in everything and for everything. To be in the light. But it's like manna. You can't hold on to hope and then store it up for the future. It doesn't last that way. It's more like when you're a little chilly and the sun's behind a cloud. And as soon as it comes out of the cloud, you can feel it. You start to warm up. You've got to encounter it. It's got to touch you. It's got to begin to shine and reach you. And that's when the change occurs. That's the way hope works. Yet, like Mary in the dark, we're so desperate to hold on to the past, to cling to keep our head in the empty grave, that we keep our back to the warmth and the light of this hope. But Jesus calls us. And maybe we turn to then seek into the future, to follow God, to know what God's future is for us. That's the movement. That's the call. That's the hope of Easter. But then, surprisingly, to our dismay, maybe even to Mary's, Jesus says, don't hold on to me. Because the miracle and the paradox of Easter is that while we're busy looking for a dead friend in the dark, God knows that we need a living Savior to move us to the light. The magnificence of our risen Lord and Savior can't be contained or limited to the darkness even of a collective memory of the community. It can only be lived out coming into the light over and over, new and fresh. That which is and will be is where the light lives. And so following Jesus is a never-ending process. Of losing and then finding. We lose it the moment that we think we've captured it and put it where we want it, safe and in the background, looking over us like a little angel. But as soon as we do that, he's not there. We only discover new and fresh that he's different and unimaginable forms. And we begin to see and discover that there's more to see as our eyes start to take in the whole room. We discover more and more depth and detail. Every limiting demand that we put on Jesus to do our bidding is just, all it is trying to take him and put him back in the grave. And daggone it, Jesus simply will not stay there. So what we think that we long for, what we think that we miss, and that we think we beg God to fix about the dark and the past, all of that is dead, and Easter doesn't change it. It is back there. So, we can't cling to the hope that Jesus will take us back somewhere. Just take me back to God. Just take me back. Just take me back. That's what I want. That's not what we need. The way out of darkness is by moving forward into the light. And the only person who can lead us there is the Savior of light. Not the old Rabboni that we once did. All that helps us is to be familiar enough to know where he's headed. We have to leave him back there behind us in the darkness in order to move to the light. We need a new vision of our Savior. A Savior who's risen out of our disappointments, out of our personal darkness, out of those places where hope refused to shine. When that happens, we will understand Easter. Mary was never the same after that, was she? And neither are we, neither is the world. And that's the good news, that it's never the same. It's never where we were. It is always fresh and new. Everything in the New Testament rests on this proclamation that it's good news. After the risen Jesus, there is no normal. There's no, this is the way it's going to be, no matter what. We can't even count on darkness anymore, because Jesus is risen from the dead. Everything is in the light, and everything calls us forward in the light. The only thing that we can know